Hello and welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast. I'm pleased to be speaking with Patrick Neusenheisen today about Annex 1 and why a more comprehensive update to the guidance was deemed necessary and key steps for assessing gaps and ensuring compliance. Patrick is Director, Principal Consultant at PharmaLex and has more than 25 years of experience in the industry across a variety of platforms, including biologics, sterile fill finish, and solid oral dose. A quality professional with a microbiology and sterile manufacturing and ATMP background. Patrick, welcome.
Well, thanks for the introduction, Elizabeth, and I'm happy to offer you some advice that might help you and your listeners with the understanding of Annex 1.
Great. So, Patrick, perhaps we could start off by explaining why Annex 1 needed to be updated in light of the changing pharmaceutical landscape.
Yeah, sure. Annex 1 itself, it has been out for many, many years, and with the last revision that was updated in 2009. However, the most recent Annex 1 revision, which was published in August 2022 and is effective since this year, August in 2023, was a complete revision compared to the previous version. Basically, the revision was needed because it responds to technology advances as well as advances in sterile manufacturing in terms of drugs and the practices that regulators have been seeing. And as a result, the regulators decided it was time to do a proper overhaul of the guidance to document the best practices and define their expectations with regard to sterile manufacturing.
Patrick, thank you. Are there any specific observations you can share that help to highlight the importance of the new Annex 1?
Well, yeah, from a personal experience of doing audits for clients, it has been very difficult sometimes to get clients to accept and implement best practices, as they would ask where the regulations were to support that. And while there was a good guidance from the FDA on sterile products produced by aseptic processing, which is a document that goes back to 2004, the existing annex, it was quite broad and it was not very specific. So clients or auditees were many times were questioning where is that information written down that you're citing us for. And although known from experience of colleagues and peers, certain expectations were there, but not, as we say it, in black and white in a regulatory document. And now having a document that people can refer to, it helps with the stumbling blocks and help them to convince their senior management perhaps or the contract manufacturing organization in addressing these citations. And another consideration is that maybe 25 or 30 years ago, it was very common to see a classic grade A filling environment with a grade B setting in an open environment. Today, however, many more companies are starting to use restricted access barrier systems or RAPs and isolator systems and utilizing single-use systems or SUS and rapid methods in response to more diverse modalities and delivery technologies. And that needed to be reflected in the Annex 1. Also, in addition, there is the need to apply quality risk management. And all of this is reflected in the new Annex 1. It's not too prescriptive, but it gives you a good grip on what the expectations are in the world of sterile manufacturing for medicinal products.
That really does help to set the stage. Thank you, Patrick. Can you perhaps share some of the challenges with ensuring compliance with Annex 1?
Yeah, for example, if you have a new state-of-the-art facility, it's likely to be easier from a design perspective to comply with that. The issue is more likely to bringing an older facility or old equipment into compliance. First, it does cost money, but that is inherent being in the business, of course, and there is the need to make continuous improvements. It also requires rethinking of your process, and secondly, it will cost time, and with that, the potential production downtime. For example, how are you going to make sure that you are in compliance with your airlocks or use of sliding doors in your clean rooms, which is now a clear expectation and description within the Annex 1. Or you might use the classic grade AB environment that I was referring to with a fill finish machine, which you are allowed to run. But if you are going to file for a new product, regulators now expect at least RAPs in place or even better, the use of isolated technology. And you'll need to assess whether you can retrofit it or that you would require a complete new filling line to be compliant with this new Annex 1 regulation. Another example is if you handle lyophilized product without automatic loading and unloading capabilities, do you have the footprint in your facility to expand and implement an automation and a barrier technology? And secondly, it requires downtime. And can a company ensure that their medicine is not running out of stock during this downtime? So these are things you have to take into account. And if not, what are the alternatives to make sure that you are compliant with the Annex 1? The challenge many companies face is that when you have a process that has been running for many, many years, a lot of the rationale behind the decisions might not have been properly written down. And people may have left. So the knowledge behind the rationale about these practices or design choices, they have not been documented. And the new Annex 1 emphasizes on the application of quality risk management, QRM, which means know what you're doing and have a justification so you can demonstrate that you have adopted the right approach to protect your medicinal product from contamination. And ultimately, protect the patient, of course. And that requires good process understanding, and that can be very time consuming. Knowledge management within a company is very important, and it's a factor that is often overlooked.
There are obviously challenges for companies, particularly smaller and mid-sized companies, to overcome for sure. Can you offer some steps that these companies might take to assess their gaps and determine if they actually are in compliance?
Yeah, of course. The first step is to understand your process. That sounds obvious. If you have a product coming in, you filter it, you fill it in a vial or in a syringe or a cartridge and so on. And that is, of course, a very simplistic summary of your process. But what are all the steps in between, the little details? From start at the warehouse until your product leaves the warehouse and is shipped to the clinic, the warehouse, the distributor, and so on. You have to map that out and make sure you understand the requirements. Look at Annex 1 and the guidance provided, but also review other regulations for best practices. That just makes good business sense, of course. And when you have mapped out your process for your sterile manufacturing and everything that is involved and around it, chart that with what Annex 1 requires and assess what you have in place and where you might have a gap. This process requires a multidisciplinary team and not just a QA function or a microbiologist. Ensure your subject matter experts, they assess their areas and compare it against the Annex 1 guidance to ensure that there are no gaps or recognize and acknowledge potential gaps. And of course, equally important, when you are compliant, write down the references to your documents, reports, procedures, policy, and so on, because it makes it so much easier when you have written that down in an overview and refer back to it.
Okay, there will obviously be times when equipment or facilities are out of compliance, requiring companies to take remedial action. What does that mean from a practical point of view?
Again, with the process map and mapping it out, you need to understand and acknowledge that you have a gap that requires remediation and what the magnitude of that gap is. If it comes down to engineering solutions and you don't have the right way, you can circumvent or try to prepare and minimize that gap procedurally. And in that case, it's about emphasizing or enhancing the practices to make sure that they are compliant. And of course, if you are talking about practices that are just simply not in place, then it becomes very difficult to leave that gap open without proper justification and further remediation. It's about the justification that you have in place and knowing the associated risk and determine why is it still working for you and why is it okay to have a gap and not be fully into compliant. What is the risk to the product and what is your remediation around that? And this can be in the interim and in the final remediation plan.
Great. Thanks, Patrick. Perhaps you could offer an example of the kind of gap from a solution perspective that might be acceptable if good processes are actually in place.
Yeah, that's a good one. One example is the use of clean room airlocks. The recommendation in the guideline, for example, is that personnel and materials, they should be kept separate. However, there is a provision in Annex 1 that states that if that isn't possible, then ensure that material and personnel can't enter at the same time. Or if you have material or personnel hatches that are not unidirectional, ensure that personnel or materials cannot go in while the other is going out. It's about managing the process in a good manner with the knowledge and tools that you have.
That's a really great example. Thank you, Patrick. I know we talked about steps to address gaps. I'm wondering if you can offer some best practices for complying with Annex 1, particularly for those smaller companies that might not have the resources of a large company.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The challenge for these companies is that their people typically wear different hats or have multiple functions. And because they are involved in different parts of the business, they can be overwhelmed. And in these situations, the best way forward is to map out your process, as mentioned before, or your controls during your assessment and compare them against the Annex 1. Identify the gaps and then prioritize them. It's likely you won't have the ability to fix all of them because of the resource, the times, and the cost, of course, involved. So you set the priorities, either by determining the biggest gaps or identifying the easiest issues to resolve and address those first, so-called low-hanging fruit. With Annex 1 being effective since August this year, regulators are starting to audit and inspect against it. So companies will need to show their remediation plans and timelines for addressing those gaps. You can't simply do a gap assessment and not carry out the remediations you have identified. Regulators do want to know, depending on the level of non-compliance, of course, what companies are doing to remediate those gaps. And as a simple gap assessment without a proper remediation plan and reporting of progress, that won't be accepted.
That's a very good point about regulators starting to audit against Annex 1. What, Patrick, from your understanding, are some of the typical issues that you're actually seeing in industry?
Yeah, well, there has been a big emphasis on this whole contamination control strategy and the application of quality risk management. And regulators will want to see what action is coming out of that strategy. They expect the strategy to be a living document that you take learnings from, change controls, your deviations, and feed into your contamination control strategy. If it's just used as a tick box exercise, that's, of course, poor quality risk management. And another priority will be the application of different technologies, in particular pre-use and post-sterilization integrity testing, or PUPSIT, of sterilization filters. This is not really an issue here in Ireland, where almost all companies have it built in, but it might be for a number of other companies outside Ireland that do not use PUPSIT. And that can be a challenge for future regulatory inspections. For example, last year I was conducting an audit for a company, and when I raised the question about PUPSIT, the response was like, oh, we have a risk assessment, we are not going to do that. But that is contrary to how you should apply risk assessment, of course. I would call that using risk management as you would do it with a SatMap. You type in your destination and you find a way to get to that endpoint. But instead, you should be looking at how you're going to make the requirements for PUPSIT work for you. There might be a valid reason that companies cannot implement it because the batch volumes are too small or their type of medicinal product doesn't allow for such filtration for PUPSIT, for example. But to take an approach in advance that you are not going to intend to do PUPSIT raises questions about why not. And I think that would be very difficult to explain to a regulator.
Thank you, Patrick. That's a really, really great example. Obviously, the revised Annex 1 is now effective for all stakeholders, including the regulators. Still, I can imagine it will take time to gain greater understanding. What is the industry's take on this learning curve?
Well, I think that is raising some concern with manufacturers. There have been meetings and seminars about Annex 1 and how to interpret it, and it was discussed. One of the points that was raised, while the presenter obviously has that understanding, do other regulators have the same interpretation? A recent example where a company used a so-called welding device to connect the sterile tubing, which is a very common use technology in the industry for many decades, they received a citation. The connections were made in the grade D area, which is allowed as per Annex 1. However, the regulator gave them an observation, as the regulator expected that the connection was made in the grade A environment. So it requires not only training and information for the end users in the pharmaceutical industry, but equally for the regulators. And I understand there are some initiatives for additional training and trying to bring the pharmaceutical manufacturer and the regulators together to have an open conversation. And it will be very interesting to see how that will develop over the next coming months.
Patrick, thank you so much for this really valuable advice and information for companies with regards to addressing compliance issues with Annex 1. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Pharmalex, part of Cencora, serves the pharma, biotech, and medtech industries, guiding our clients through the entire product lifecycle, from early strategic planning, non-clinical and clinical, regulatory submission processes, and post-approval activities. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.